Okay, just to review what we did last time. Because this these verses kind of give you the whole complete path in a very, very succinct way. So I'll just review briefly the first four verses and then we'll continue.
Ya, karena ayat apa syair-syair di sini itu sangat-sangat bertahap ya, sangat brief. Jadi saya akan mengulang secara singkat apa yang telah kita bahas sebelumnya.
So the first verse talks about our precious human life, which isn't just any human life. It's a human life where we have the opportunity to meet the Dharma, meet teachers, have the Sangha community, and also where we have enough physical resources to be able to practice. And especially where we have the interest in the Dharma and faith in the Dharma.
Di syair pertama membahas tentang kemuliaan terlahir sebagai manusia, bukan hanya manusia pada umumnya, melainkan bagaimana kita bisa dapat bertemu dengan Buddha, Dharma, dan Sangha dengan para guru, juga kita mempunyai keyakinan dan ketertarikan kepada Buddha.
So when we have this precious opportunity, we should really use it to free ourselves and others from cyclic existence and to attain full awakening.
Dan dengan kesempatan ini, maka kita harus gunakan sebaik-baiknya untuk mencapai kebudaan demi menolong membebaskan makhluk-makhluk dari lingkaran kehidupan.
So if you're ever wondering, what do I do with my life? What's the meaning of my life? This is it.
Bila Anda uring-uringan, hidup saya ini buat apa ya? Saya mau ngapain dalam hidup saya? Inilah jawabannya.
And the second verse is saying that while we have this precious human life, we are very distracted by things that happen in this life, especially things that we're very attached to, different people, objects, career, these kinds of things. And so that takes us away from the Dharma. Anger also destroys our merit. Ignorance prevents us from progressing along the path. And since all these disturbing emotions arise when we're in our homeland with the people we know and things that are familiar to us, then it advises us to leave our homeland, which actually means to cut these kinds of attachments.
Ya, dengan kondisi ini, manusia ini, tapi kita juga terganggu ya dengan kondisi atau keadaan yang terjadi di tempat di mana kita tinggal. Gangguan-gangguan ini kemudian akan mengurangi kita untuk bisa mencapai tujuan tersebut. Maka dikatakan tinggalkanlah kondisi tempat tinggal Anda. Yang dimaksud dengan tempat tinggal itu bukan adalah melepaskan semua kemelekatan-kemelekatan yang membuat kita jauh dari praktek. Misalnya adalah kemarahan atau ketidaktahuan yang membuat kita semakin jauh dari praktek.
Okay. Then the third verse is encouraging, follows up on that and encourages us to live a simple lifestyle. Yeah, where we don't have, you know, such a huge social life and running around here and there and, you know, drinking and drugging and all that kind of stuff, because that's just gonna make us create a lot of negative karma. And then again, it's gonna prevent us from really progressing on the path.
Tindak lanjut atau kelanjutan dari syair kedua adalah kita didorong untuk hidup sederhana, menjauhkan diri dari kemelekatan kepada hal-hal yang membawa kita semakin jauh dari jalur praktik. Misalnya melekat kepada kematan atau terlalu banyak nongkrong nongkrong, minum obat-obatan dan sebagainya.
And then verse 4 is saying, well, why should we try and separate from all these things we're attached to? And it's because loved ones, they're wonderful to have, but we'll have to separate from them at some point. The wealth that we work so hard to get, also we have to separate from it. And consciousness, which is just like a guest in a hotel of this body, will someday leave this body where we will die. And at the time we die, it's the karma that we take with us, virtuous or non-virtuous karma, and the imprints of the Dharma. So if we're thinking long term, then you know, we don't want to get stuck in just catering to all the attachments of this life.
Dan ketika kita terjebak dalam di cair ketiga itu, maka kita akan banyak melakukan karma-karma buruk. Dan diingatkan kembali bahwa ketika kita berpisah dengan tubuh ini, maka yang penting adalah jejak-jejak karma yang kita miliki. Dan itu akan berpengaruh. Kenapa? Karena kita akan meninggalkan kehidupan ini. Kita akan berpisah dengan orang yang kita kasihi. Kekayaan kita kumpulkan akan hilang. Dan kemudian kesadaran kita yang hanya merupakan tamu di tubuh ini pun akan pergi. Dan ketika kematian menjelang, maka yang akan berpengaruh adalah jejak-jejak dharma dan karma-karma yang telah kita lakukan.
Okay. So now that's the review. We'll start on verse 5. Moment, do you have the yes. text with you?
I have the version from the Singapore friend, I think the English version.
Okay. Okay, so verse 5 says, when you keep their company, your three poisons increase. Your activities of hearing, thinking, and meditating decline, and they make you lose your love and compassion. Give up bad friends. This is the practice of bodhisattva.
Cair kelima mengingatkan kita untuk meninggalkan pergaulan yang buruk. Kenapa? Karena kita bergaul dengan mereka, maka tiga racun akan muncul. Perbuatan-perbuatan Anda, yaitu mendengarkan, merenungkan, dan memeditasikan dharma itu akan berkurang. Anda akan kehilangan orang terkasih dan kasih sayang Anda. Tinggalkan teman-teman yang buruk, inilah praktik bodhisattva.
Okay, so when it's talking about giving up bad friends, it's not referring to people who look ugly and they're going to come get you, you know. But actually, it's referring to people who are quite fond of us and they want us to be happy, but they don't have the Buddhist perspective on life. So they only think of the pleasure of this life. They don't think of karma, of enlightenment.
Jadi bicara tentang teman yang buruk, itu bukan orang yang serem ya, orang yang jahat, bukan. Tapi malah sebaliknya, orang-orang yang senang dekat dengan kita. Kenapa mereka disebut buruk? Karena mereka tidak punya sudut pandang Buddhis. Misalnya, memikirkan tentang karma, memikirkan tentang kehidupan, kehidupan selanjutnya.
Okay.
Oleh sebab itu, mereka hanya mengajak kita untuk bersenang-senang.
So these are the friends that when you want to go to a Dharma retreat, say to you, why are you going to a Dharma retreat? Why don't you come out with us and we can go and have some fun and travel and do something really exciting?
Yeah. Jenis cirinya adalah bila Anda bilang, saya mau pergi meditasi, mau pergi retret. Oh, dia bilang, ngapain? Pergi sama kita aja, jalan-jalan, senang-senang, happy-happy.
Okay, so they mean well, but because they don't have the Buddhist perspective, they will interfere with our Dharma activities of learning the teachings, contemplating the teachings, and meditating on them.
Ya, karena mereka tidak punya sudut pandang Buddhis, maka mereka menghalangi kita untuk mendengarkan, merenungkan, dan memeditasikan ajaran Dharma.
And they will make us lose our love and compassion in the sense that they have a very worldly outlook. And so they will encourage us to be attached to some people and to hate other people and to have all sorts of opinions and judgment and criticize people.
Ya, karena kita akan kehilangan kasih dan welas asih. Kenapa? Karena orang-orang seperti ini mendorong kita untuk misalnya mengkritik orang, menilai orang, ngomongin orang yang buruk. Dan itu akan membuat kita kehilangan kasih dan welas asih kita.
So this is why they're called bad friends from a Buddhist viewpoint, because they are taking us away from our spiritual practice and from transforming our mind into wisdom and compassion.
Mereka disebut teman yang buruk karena mereka menjauhkan kita dari praktek spiritual, menjauhkan kita dari menumbuh kembangkan welas asih dan kearifan.
Okay. So, that's verse 5.
Itulah ayat syair kelima ya.
Okay. Then so it's really important that you understand this. The verse is not saying just dump all your old friends, you know, but it's saying keep your values straight and don't let other people distract you from them.
Ya, ini syair ini bukan berarti Anda menyingkirkan semua kawan-kawan Anda, bukan, tapi mengingatkan kita untuk memiliki sebuah nilai dalam diri kita dan kita memegang teguh nilai-nilai tersebut, khususnya untuk bidang spiritual.
Okay, then verse says, when you rely on them, your faults come to an end, and your good qualities grow like the waxing moon. Cherish spiritual teachers even more than your own body. This is the practice of bodhisattvas.
Syair ke-6 bicara tentang mengandalkan mentor spiritual. Jadi ketika kita mengandalkan mentor spiritual, maka kesalahan kita akan berkurang, kualitas-kualitas baju kita akan meningkat seperti bulan sabit, ya, senangi guru spiritual Anda bahkan lebih daripada diri Anda sendiri. Inilah praktik bodhisattva.
Okay. So this is telling us about why we need to have spiritual teachers and also why we need to really check out the qualities of spiritual teachers before we make that relationship with someone.
Ya, ayat ini mengingatkan kita perlu punya guru spiritual sekaligus agar kita memeriksa seorang sebelum memutuskan ia adalah guru spiritual kita.
So not everybody who calls themselves a teacher necessarily is a qualified teacher.
Tidak apa, setiap orang yang menyebut dirinya guru belum tentu guru yang.
So it's important that you learn something about a teacher before forming that relationship. So that could mean listening to their teachings for a while and checking to see that they teach according to the general Buddhist view, that they're not making up their own kind of thing to attract people.
Jadi kita perlu dengarkan ajaran dari guru tersebut dan periksa apakah ajarannya itu sesuai dengan paling tidak ajaran Buddha secara umum. Jadi bukan bikin mengada-ngada sekedar untuk menarik perhatian orang banyak.
And you want to make sure that the teacher has a good dharma education so that what they teach you will be correct.
Dan pastikan guru tersebut memiliki latar belakang pendidikan dharma sehingga yang diajarkan itu benar.
And that the teacher has good ethical conduct, that they aren't breaking precepts, they aren't acting really wildly and getting drunk in the streets and so on.
Pastikan mereka juga mempraktikkan lima sila dengan baik, ya, tidak mabok dan mabok di tengah jalan.
You laugh, but I've seen this.
Anda mungkin tertawa, tapi saya sudah lihat hal kayak seperti itu.
Huh? You want to make sure that the teacher really has compassion for the students and is willing to teach you and answer questions and guide you.
Pastikan guru tersebut memiliki welas asih. Dia akan menjawab pertanyaan dan memandu dan membimbing Anda.
And that the teacher is very sincere, that they're not just looking to have a lot of offerings so that they can get rich or have a whole string of followers coming after them, being so devoted. You know, you don't want a teacher that's looking for reputation and offerings. You want somebody who really is sincere about the Dharma and sincere about guiding students.
Ya, gurunya itu juga harus tulus ya dalam membimbing murid-muridnya di dalam Dharma. Jadi seorang bukan seorang guru yang mengajar untuk persembahan atau punya begitu banyak pengikut yang sangat-sangat mengabdi, sangat-sangat berdedikasi.
And then a special warning for women, yeah. If a guru is coming onto you and you can tell that they want sexual favors, do not think, oh, there's some high being and I should go along with it. You tell them absolutely clean, clear, no.
Ini khusus untuk perempuan, bila Anda ada guru yang meminta transaksi seksual, maka dengan jelas Anda katakan tidak.
So hopefully in Indonesia this isn't happening, but in my country it has happened, and also in India.
Ya, jadi di Indonesia mudah-mudahan tidak, tapi saya sudah lihat di negara saya dan khususnya di India. Jadi jangan berpikir jika guru itu adalah orang makhluk tinggi ya, punya pencapaian tinggi yang akan meminta Anda berhubungan.
I could tell you lots of stories. But I won't right now.
Saya bisa ceritakan banyak, tapi sekarang tidak.
But if you check the qualities of a teacher well, and you see that they're really qualified, and how they teach really touches your heart, it really moves you and inspires you to practice, then you can form a student-teacher relationship with that person.
Teliti dengan seksama ya, sebelum Anda memutuskan hubungan antara guru dan murid, teliti apakah ajarannya itu benar dan dapat menyentuh dan memotivasi Anda.
And then what happens is your spiritual mentor, your guru, becomes a very, very important person in your life, because there's someone who is teaching you the path to liberation, and who else in your life cares about you enough to teach you how to free yourself from this mess of samsara we're in.
Ya, dan mengapa ini hubungan yang penting? Karena beliau adalah guru Anda, adalah orang yang berwelas kasih, yang peduli kepada Anda. Siapa lagi di dunia ini yang peduli kepada Anda, yang mau mengajarkan jalan untuk bebas dari samsara.
So that's why if you check somebody out and then you form a relationship, that's why it says that your good qualities will increase like the waxing moon, because you will hear the Buddha's teachings, you will be inspired to practice them, and then of course your good qualities will increase, because you have the support and the compassion and the wisdom of your guru behind you.
Ya, dikatakan karena ajarannya, welas asihnya, Anda termotivasi, Anda terdorong untuk mendengarkan dan mempraktikkan, sehingga kualitas-kualitas bajik Anda akan meningkat, menjadi lebih baik.
And the verse says, cherish your spiritual teacher even more than your own body, because at the time of death, we have to leave our body, but everything that our spiritual teacher has taught us, that we've practiced, that will come with us into the next life and enable us to have a good life and to be able to continue practicing the Dharma in future lives.
Ya, ketika kita meninggal, maka kita akan meninggalkan tubuh kita. Tapi praktek-praktek yang telah kita lakukan, kebajikan-kebajikan yang kita lakukan akan terus bersama kita, dan ini dapat membawa kita untuk mempunyai kehidupan berikutnya yang baik, dan juga dapat melanjutkan praktek-praktek kita di kehidupan mendatang.
So that's verse 6. Verse 7 is telling us who not to follow on the spiritual path.
Yaitu syair 6, 7, syair ke-7 berbicara tentang siapa yang kita tidak boleh ikuti atau teladani dalam jalan spiritual.
So it says, bound himself in the jail of cyclic existence, what worldly God can give you protection? Therefore, when you seek refuge, take refuge in the three jewels that will not betray you. This is the practice of bodhisattvas.
Ayat ke-7 berbunyi, terikat di dalam penjara lingkaran kehidupan, dewa duniawi mana yang dapat melindungi Anda? Oleh sebab itu, berlindunglah, carilah perlindungan. Berlindunglah di dalam triratna yang tidak akan mengkhianati Anda. Inilah praktik bodhisattva.
Okay, so worldly gods, those are like the Hindu gods, the Christian or Muslim gods.
Ya, dewa-dewa, ya, seperti yang ada di dalam di Hindu dan di agama lain.
Yeah, it also refers to when you go to fortune tellers, the kind of spirits that they contact that tell your fortune or these such things.
Ya, atau ketika Anda ke peramal, peramal itu kemasukan dan dia makhluk-makhluk yang bisa menceritakan, ya, memberitahukan Anda hal-hal yang Anda tanya.
So some of these gods may have certain power. But they cannot lead us to full awakening.
Mereka punya kekuatan, tapi tidak dapat membimbing Anda menuju penggugahan sempurna.
Because they themselves are bound in the prison of cyclic existence. They aren't liberated beings.
Karena mereka sendiri terikat di dalam lingkaran kehidupan dan kematian, mereka bukan makhluk yang telah terbebas.
So we can't trust their advice. Yeah, we can't trust their teachings, even though they may have some worldly powers.
Kita tidak dapat mengandalkan atau percaya kepada ajaran mereka, meskipun mereka punya kekuatan gaib, kekuatan supernatural.
And so when we're looking for spiritual guidance, spiritual refuge, then we should look towards the three jewels, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, because they are reliable and we can trust them.
Ya, ketika Anda butuh perlindungan, Anda butuh yang Anda andalkan, Anda dapat melihat ke tiga permata, karena mereka dapat dipercaya dan dapat diandalkan.
Okay. Now, you've probably all heard the story of Angulimala in the sutras, who he had a teacher who was not a qualified teacher, who told him to go out and kill 1,000 people and make a necklace of their finger bones.
Anda pasti tahu kisah Angulimala. Dia berguru dengan guru yang tidak mempunyai kualitas. Jadi gurunya minta Angulimala membunuh 1,000 orang dan membuat kalung dari jari, dari tulangnya.
Yeah, so this was a false teacher, and the kind of god he followed or gods he followed, we don't know, but they were leading him to create horrible negative karma and to harm so many living beings.
Ya, ini adalah contoh dari guru yang tidak berkualitas atau dewa yang dia ikutin. Nah, akibatnya dia menyakiti begitu banyak.
And so he had killed 999 people and had their finger bones in a necklace. And he was looking for the 1,000th person. And he saw the Buddha walking very slowly, very mindfully. And he started to chase the Buddha because he wanted to kill him and get the finger bones. And however much he ran, he couldn't catch up to the Buddha.
Dan dia sudah bunuh 999, tinggal satu lagi, 1000. Dan ketika dia melihat Buddha berjalan dengan sangat sadar, dia mengejar. Tapi seberapa cepat pun dia berlari, dia tidak mampu mengejar.
So Angulimala screamed out to the Buddha, "Stop!" And the Buddha responded, "I have stopped." And then Angulimala said, "Then why can't I catch you?" And the Buddha explained that what he had stopped was the whole cycle of ignorant rebirth, you know, that brings more and more dukkha or unsatisfactory experiences. And that really shocked Angulimala, and it really made him think, you know, oh, what are the qualities of a good spiritual mentor and what kind of path should I be following? Because I've been here killing all these people.
Dan karena capek, Angulimala teriak, "Berhenti!" Buddha menjawab, "Saya sudah berhenti." Angulimala bingung dan Buddha menjelaskan bahwa Buddha telah menghentikan segala kekeliru tahuan dan juga penyebab kelahiran. Nah, ini Angulimala kemudian menyadari dan bingung, dah saya sudah mengikuti guru spiritual, tapi kenapa saya masih melakukan hal seperti ini? Inilah contoh dari Anda mengikuti guru yang salah.
And so then when the Buddha started to teach him, he took refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and eventually became an arhat.
Dan ketika Buddha mulai mengajarkan Dharma, Angulimala menyatakan berlindung kepada Triratna, dan dia kemudian menjadi arahat.
So why should we trust the Buddha? Why is he said to be a perfect spiritual guide?
Mengapa kita harus percaya Buddha? Mengapa Buddha dikatakan sebagai pembimbing spiritual yang sempurna?
Well, first of all, he's eliminated from his mind stream all of the defilements. So
pertama, Buddha telah membersihkan pikirannya dari semua pikiran-pikiran negatif.
So ignorance, anger, clinging attachment, jealousy, pride, laziness, resentment, all of the different wrong views and disturbing emotions that afflict us, the Buddha has eliminated completely from his mind stream.
Ya, Buddha telah membersihkan semua kekeliruan, semua pikiran-pikiran negatif dari arus pikiran. Jadi sudah bersih total, kemarahan, kecemburuan dan lain sebagainya itu semua sudah bersih.
And he also generated the wisdom that knows exactly the deeper mode of existence of phenomena, how they really exist.
Dan Buddha telah menumbuhkembangkan sebuah pengetahuan yang benar-benar mengetahui bagaimana eksistensi atau keberadaan segala sesuatu.
And his compassion spreads equally to every single sentient being. No matter whether we believe in him or not, no matter how we act, the Buddha's compassion is completely impartial. So he's never going to play favorites and teach some students but not teach others or deceive people.
Ya, welas asih dan kasih sayang Buddha itu menyebar tanpa batas, jadi tidak pilih kasih. Jadi beliau akan mengajarkan Dharma kepada orang yang percaya maupun tidak, yang meyakini ataupun tidak, dan juga Buddha tidak memilih orang ya yang mau di sini yang ini boleh diajarkan dan itu tidak.
So the Buddha was once an ordinary being like us, with the same kind of problems and mental defilements as us, but Through learning the Dharma and practicing it, he purified his mind, he gained all the realizations, and became a fully awakened being. So also through the example of his life, we see that if we practice just like he did, we too can attain full awakening.
Ya, Buddha juga sama seperti kita pada dasarnya manusia yang mempunyai persoalan-persoalan dalam hidup. Nah, jika kita memperhatikan apa yang Buddha lakukan, apa yang Buddha praktikkan, maka kita juga mampu untuk mencapai penggugahan sempurna.
Okay. Then the Dharma jewel, that's the real refuge.
Ya, dan permata Dharma, inilah perlindungannya sesungguhnya.
So sometimes when we talk about Dharma, we're referring to the scriptures or we're referring to the teachings. But that's not the Dharma jewel that we take refuge in.
Okay, bicara Dharma, kadang kita merujuk kepada buku atau ajaran, tapi sesungguhnya bukan itu Dharma di mana kita berlindung.
The Dharma that's the real refuge are the last two of the Four Noble Truths, true cessations and true paths.
Dharma itu adalah yang dua dari, dua yang terakhir dari empat kebenaran Arya, yaitu yes, Venerable, please.
And they're the real refuge, because when we actualize them in our own mind stream, then we become the Sangha jewel, and then we also will become the Buddha jewel. Now, so the true cessation and true paths are the realizations that we want to gain.
Ya, akhir duka dan jalan menuju akhir duka adalah realisasi sejati yang kita ingin dapatkan. Kenapa? Karena bila kita sudah meraihnya, maka kita menjadi perlindungan Dharma itu sendiri, kita menjadi perlindungan Sangha sendiri, dan menjadi Buddha. Itulah akhir duka yang kita sungguh-sungguh ingin capai.
And then the Sangha jewel refers to the Arya beings. So the Arya is a Sanskrit and Pali term, and it refers to all of those who have the deep wisdom that knows the ultimate mode of existence.
Dan permata Sangha mengacu kepada para Arya, itu orang-orang suci, mereka yang telah memahami secara mendalam bagaimana eksistensi dunia ini terjadi.
So these beings also are reliable, we can trust them, because they know the truth. Yeah, they're not deceived about how things exist.
Mereka adalah dapat diandalkan karena mereka memahami kebenaran, ya, bukan hanya sebatas mengetahui bagaimana sesuatu dapat eksis.
Now, I don't know in Indonesia, but in my country there's a lot of confusion about what the word Sangha means. And some people... Go ahead.
Tidak tahu bagaimana di sana, tapi di negeri saya ada banyak salah pengertian tentang Sangha.
And some people call everybody who comes to the Buddha, a Buddhist center, Sangha, but that's not the correct usage of the word.
Ya, ada yang mengatakan bahwa setiap orang yang datang ke pusat Dharma adalah Sangha, tapi itu bukan sebuah penggunaan kata yang tepat.
So, the actual Sangha that we take refuge in are the arhats, the Arya beings that I mentioned, the representation of that Sangha, yeah, is the monastic community of four or more fully ordained people.
Okay, jadi Sangha yang dimaksud sebagai perlindungan adalah para arhat atau para Arya yang direpresentasikan dengan para monastik yang terdiri dari empat biku atau lebih.
So not all of the monastics have are Aryas. You know, by and large we're ordinary beings. But the thing is, when we live in a community together, then we can perform certain activities and we can be like a beacon of hope for people in society. Because when you want to learn the Dharma, when you have problems and you need help, you can go to a monastery and speak to people who can help you.
Jadi apa tidak semua anggota sangga itu atau tidak semua monastik itu adalah rahat, tapi ketika kita berkumpul bersama, maka kita menjadi semacam mercusuar harapan, ya. Jadi ketika orang-orang mempunyai masalah, mereka dapat datang untuk bercerita dan mempunyai harapan.
So for example, at our monastery, we have, you know, quite a number of bhikshunis, and people write to us, and they, even people we've never met before, and they say, oh, it touches our hearts so much to know that there's a group of people meditating on love and compassion and trying to generate wisdom. And, you know, thank you for being, having that community that is inspiring for us. So that's how the monastic sangha functions and,
ya,
and society.
Ya, di tempat kami ada beberapa biksuni dan orang-orang menulis bagaimana mereka terinspirasi bahwa ada sekumpulan orang berlatih untuk dapat menumbuh kembangkan welas asih dan kasih sayang kepada orang. Inilah bagaimana sangha berfungsi memberikan dorongan dan inspirasi di dalam masyarakat.
But the important thing in this verse is that the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha will never betray us. They will never teach us false teachings.
Dan yang terpenting adalah Tri Ratna, Buddha, Dharma, dan Sangha tidak akan pernah mengkhianati kita, tidak akan pernah memberikan ajaran yang salah.
Okay. Then verse number 8. The subduer, that refers to the Buddha, the subduer said that all the unbearable suffering of bad rebirths is the fruit of wrongdoing. Therefore, even at the cost of your life, never do wrong. This is the practice of bodhisattvas.
Buddha mengajarkan bahwa semua penderitaan yang tidak dapat kita tahan atau sangat berat dari kelahiran yang buruk adalah buah dari perbuatan keliru. Oleh sebab itu, meskipun harus mengorbankan hidupmu, jangan pernah melakukan hal yang keliru. Inilah praktik bodhisattva.
Okay. So, all of the suffering that sentient beings have when they're born in the lower realms of existence, in the hell realm, in the hungry ghost realm, in the animal realm, all of that comes from non-virtuous actions, their own non-virtuous actions.
Semua penderitaan yang dirasakan oleh makhluk-makhluk yang lahir di alam rendah, alam hewan, alam hantu kelaparan, dan alam neraka adalah buah dari perbuatan-perbuatan buruk mereka.
Mm-hmm. And so the Buddha, kindly, out of his compassion, he described to us what are the non-virtuous actions that we want to avoid creating?
Buddha dengan welas asih menjelaskan perbuatan-perbuatan buruk apa yang harus kita hindari.
And when we hear these, sometimes we get a little bit alarmed because we realize that we've done them. And so we have the seeds in our mind stream to have an unfortunate rebirth after we pass away from this life.
Jika kita mendengarkan ajaran itu, kita jadi sadar, oh, saya telah melakukan hal tersebut dan saya telah menanam benih untuk kelahiran yang buruk di kehidupan mendatang.
Okay. If it's any comfort to you, I have done all 10. Not why I've been a nun, but in my lifetime.
Apakah Anda cukup nyaman bila saya bilang saya pernah melakukan 10 perbuatan buruk tersebut? Ya, bukan ketika saya sekarang, tapi dalam masa kehidupan saya, selama saya hidup.
And then who knows what we've done in our previous lives, And we still have the seeds of those negative actions on our mind stream.
Dan apa yang bagaimana dengan kehidupan-kehidupan lampau? Ya, kita masih punya benihnya di dalam arus pemikiran kita.
Okay, so let me go through the 10 non-virtues that we want to avoid.
Mari kita lihat 10 perbuatan buruk yang kita harus hindari.
So there's 3 that we do physically with our body. The first one is killing or taking life.
Ada 3 yang dilakukan dengan tubuh. Pertama adalah membunuh.
Okay, and the worst, of course, is killing a human being.
Yang terburuk adalah membunuh manusia.
Yeah. And also killing animals to eat or for their fur or for hobbies or whatever, you know, that's very, very harmful.
Ya, bunuh hewan, apakah untuk kulitnya, dimakan, atau hobi. Itu juga perbuatan yang sangat-sangat buruk.
The second one that we do physically is stealing or taking what has not been freely given to us.
Yang kedua adalah mencuri atau mengambil yang tidak diberikan kepada kita.
So this means it doesn't mean that you have to put on a mask and break into somebody's house in the middle of the night. No, we're not talking about that.
Ini you bukan know, berarti
it's included in this, but I don't think that you people are going to do that.
Ini tidak berarti Anda pakai topeng terus jadi perampok masuk rumah orang ya. Tentu itu termasuk perbuatan buruk, tapi saya tidak yakin Anda akan melakukannya.
But what it means is if you're working for a company and without permission of the company, you use their resources for your own personal good. You take their paper, you take, a small device, you use their credit cards for your own personal use, these kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Contohnya misalnya seseorang yang kerja di perusahaan, jadi dia menggunakan fasilitas perusahaan untuk kepentingan pribadinya, mengambil barang-barang dari kantor atau menggunakan fasilitas kantor untuk urusan pribadi.
It also includes overcharging customers when you're doing business, not paying fees or taxes that you're supposed to pay. And also borrowing things from other people and not returning them.
Termasuk juga tidak bayar pajak atau Anda taruh harga yang terlalu tinggi dan pinjam barang tidak dikembalikan.
So it's very interesting. You might want to look around your home and see how many things you've borrowed from other people that you just forgot to return to them. Or maybe how much money they loaned you that you just forgot to return, and it might be a good idea to repay.
Coba perhatikan di rumah.
Just the cat.
Ada barang yang punya orang lain yang Anda pinjam dan Anda lupa untuk pulangin, atau lihat uang yang Anda miliki, ingat itu pinjam dari orang dan Anda lupa untuk memulangkan.
Okay. So you see, you don't have to be a burglar to break this one.
Anda tidak harus jadi pencuri, perampok untuk melanggar yang kedua ini, ya.
Then the third one we do physically is unwise and unkind sexual behavior.
Dan yang ketiga adalah perilaku seksual yang tidak baik dan tidak bijaksana.
So what this means is you're in a relationship and you go out with somebody outside of your relationship, or you're single but you go with somebody who is in a relationship.
Ini dapat berarti Anda berhubungan dengan orang seluar pasangan Anda jika Anda sudah punya pasangan, atau bila Anda single Anda berhubungan dengan seseorang yang sudah mempunyai pasangan.
It also includes having sex when there's the chance of sexually transmitted diseases. You don't want to get anything, or if you have something, you don't want to give to another person. So it's very important to use protection if necessary.
Ini juga bicara tentang berhubungan yang dapat menyebabkan penyakit kelamin yang menular. Ya. Jadi Anda tidak tidak berupaya untuk mencegah penularan tersebut.
It also includes just using people for one's own sexual pleasure without really having any feeling for them at all. Just using them like an object for your pleasure.
Ya, ini juga contohnya adalah menggunakan seseorang sebagai objek untuk kesenangan Anda tanpa mempunyai tanpa mempunyai niat untuk mengasihi.
So sometimes it happens that people come together and they say, "Oh, no obligation. We're not going to be in a long-term relationship. Let's just have a good time." And so they have sexual relationships, but they don't, one of them doesn't realize that the other one is starting to get attached or starting to have some emotional feelings. And then, you know, they break up with that person and that person's very, very hurt.
Ini juga bicara tentang orang-orang yang tidak mempunyai niat untuk mempunyai komitmen jangka panjang. Dan ketika mereka menjalin sebuah hubungan dan salah satu pihak sudah memunculkan kemelekatan dan ketika mereka berpisah, maka salah satunya sangat sakit.
Okay, so killing, stealing, unwise and unkind sexual behavior are the three physical ones that we do.
Yeah. Tiga perbuatan buruk melalui tubuh adalah pembunuhan, pencurian, dan perbuatan seksual yang keliru.
Verbally, there's four.
Secara verbal itu ada empat.
Okay. And the first one is lying.
Pertama adalah berbohong.
Okay, so you know something is like this and you say it's like that.
Anda tahu sesuatu itu seperti ini, tapi Anda katakan seperti itu.
Now, lying is something that we justify and rationalize all the time.
Bohong itu sesuatu yang kita bilang nggak apa-apa, ya, sering sekali seperti itu.
Oh, if I tell my friend the truth, it will hurt their feelings. So I'll just tell them something else, and then that way their feelings won't get hurt.
Ya, kalau saya jujur, nanti dia sakit hati. Udahlah, saya ngomong yang lain aja supaya dia nggak sakit.
Okay. So I'm lying out of compassion. Not because I have a negative intention to protect myself.
Saya bohong itu karena belas kasih, bukan karena saya mau melindungi diri saya.
Yeah. So what you have here is two big mistakes. The initial thing you did that is probably not something good because you don't want anybody else to know about it. So that's the first big non-virtue. Then you lie about it to cover it up.
Ya, ada dua kesalahan besar yang Anda lakukan, ya. Yang pertama, Anda tidak ingin orang lain tahu yang sesungguhnya. Yang kedua, Anda berbohong atas hal tersebut.
The problem with lying is that we often can't remember who we told what story to.
Masalahnya bila kita berbohong, kita nggak ingat kita ceritakan kisah yang mana kepada siapa, ya.
So we get our story mixed up, or the person we lie to, they talk to other people, they find out that we lied to them.
Dan kisah kita jadi campur baur dan Orang yang kita bohongi cerita ke orang lain, dan akhirnya dia tahu kalau kita itu bohong.
Now, in our relationships with other people, whether it's relationships at work or in our family or other personal relationships, trust is something very, very important to have a good relationship.
Ya, dalam suatu hubungan, apakah personal ataupun profesional, kepercayaan itu sangat-sangat penting dalam suatu hubungan.
And if we lie to people, then it completely breaks that trust.
Bila kita bohong, maka kita sangat menghancurkan kepercayaan itu.
So the way I look at it, if somebody lies to me, then how can I trust them with anything again? Because, you know, they'll do whatever and then they'll try and cover it up.
Dan bila saya dibohongi, maka saya mikir bagaimana saya dapat percaya sama orang ini lagi, karena mereka sudah bohong dan mereka melakukan sesuatu dan mereka berusaha menutupinya.
So it's very important that we be truthful.
Penting sekali bagi kita untuk jujur.
On the other hand, being truthful does not mean that we insult people and tell them everything we think about them.
Jujur juga berarti tidak berarti kita boleh menghina orang dan katakan apapun tentang.
Okay. So, for example, let's say your grandma invites you over for a meal and she cooks some food and you don't like that kind of food at all.
Misalnya nenek Anda undang makan dan dia masak sesuatu yang Anda sama sekali tidak suka.
So if when grandma says, "Oh, how do you like the food?" you don't go, "Grandma, this is awful."
Jadi ketika nenek Anda bertanya, "Gimana masakannya?" Anda nggak bilang gini, "Aduh, ini makanannya nggak enak banget."
Because what grandma's really asking, her real question, is not really if the taste of the food is good. What she's really saying is, I care about you and I cook this meal so that we could have some time together and so that I can express my affection towards you. Do you understand that? That's what she's really wanting to know when she asks you, how do you like the food?
Karena sesungguhnya nenek tidak bertanya tentang rasa masakan itu. Dia ingin mengungkapkan kasihnya kepada Anda sehingga dia mengundang Anda untuk datang dan makan. Itulah yang sesungguhnya dia sedang tanyakan.
So that question you can answer truthfully. You don't talk about how the food is terrible. You say, "Grandma, you're so kind to invite me over and to go to all the effort to cook a meal, and I really enjoy coming here and spending time with you." And that will make her very, very happy.
Ya, Anda bisa jawab, "Nenek, terima kasih. Kamu telah repot-repot masak buat saya. Terima kasih kamu telah mengundang saya untuk datang ke sini untuk makan." Nah, jawaban itu akan membuat beliau sangat bahagia.
Okay. So truth telling, especially in a marriage, especially in a family, it's very important to be truthful.
Ya, jujur itu penting sekali di dalam keluarga, di dalam sebuah perkawinan.
And that means also not doing things that we may be tempted to lie about. Yeah, because you want to avoid the double thing, the initial thing plus the lie.
Dan ini termasuk menghindari melakukan sesuatu yang kemudian Anda harus berbohong. Nah, ini akan membuat Anda menghindari dua hal ya, yaitu melakukan kebohongan dan menutupinya.
And just to give an example of how damaging lying is, President Trump, way back at the beginning of the year, he knew about the coronavirus. He knew how deadly it was. He knew how easily it spread, but he lied to the American people and said, oh, it's nothing. It's just like getting the flu. It will magically disappear. Don't worry about it. And as a result of his lying, people did not take proper precaution. And so now 192,000 Americans have died from the coronavirus. Yeah, this is the effect of lying.
192,000. Wow.
192,000.
Thousands people. Oh. Jadi salah satu contoh berbohong adalah di awal-awal pandemi ini Presiden Trump tahu ya bagaimana virus ini berbahaya, tapi beliau mengatakan ini cuma flu biasa, nanti juga akan hilang, dan akibatnya sangat buruk, 192 ribu orang Amerika itu meninggal karena corona.
Well, lying can really be catastrophic. And then when this got revealed in the press, now he's lying again, and he's saying, actually, it was a very good answer. I didn't want to make people upset and make them panic.
Dan ya, bohong ini menimbulkan bencana. Dan ketika diungkapkan pers, beliau mengatakan, ya saya menjawab dengan baik. Saya tidak mau membuat orang-orang menjadi panik.
I could go on and on about his lies, but I will stop.
Saya bisa apa terus menceritakan kebohongannya, tapi saya harus berhenti.
Then the next verbal one to abandon is divisive words. And that's where we talk behind people's back and say nasty things about them behind their back so that it creates quarreling.
Jadi yang harus kita hindari berikutnya adalah ucapan yang memecah belah. Kita ngomongin orang di belakangnya, dan kemudian akibatnya orang-orang jadi bertengkar.
So maybe you're jealous of a colleague at work, and it looks like they will get a promotion, but you want the promotion. So you go to the boss, and you say some nasty things about your colleague, so to create division and separation between the colleague and your boss.
Ya, misalnya di kantor ada teman yang naik jabatan, tapi Anda cemburu, Anda lapor ke bos, Anda ceritakan keburukan-keburukannya kepada atasan Anda, dan ini kemudian menciptakan perselisihan antara rekan Anda dengan atasan.
And divisive words happen very often when we form small cliques of people within a larger group, because then a few people get together and we all start talking badly about this person and badly about that person. And that's how we bond and form friendship, is by talking bad about other people. And it just creates so much friction. Yeah.
Yeah. Dan contoh dari ucapan memecah belah ini juga ada di dalam kelompok besar. Biasanya ada sekumpulan orang kecil, ngegrup ya, kecil, kemudian ngomongin orang lain, ngomongin si A, ngomongin si B, dan kemudian makin melebar, dan inilah yang kemudian akan menyebabkan suatu perpecahan.
Yeah. It happens in families. Everybody gets together. Oh, that person in the family, they do this, they do that.
Ya, di keluarga juga terjadi ya, ketika keluarga berkumpul, mereka ngomong, ah, si ini seperti itu, si B seperti itu, dia melakukan ini, dia melakukan itu.
So we should try and create harmony among people, not create division and resentment.
Kita berusahalah untuk menciptakan keharmonisan, ya, bukan kepisahan, bukan pemecah belah.
Okay. And then the next one is harsh speech. So this means insulting people, denigrating them, teasing them, making fun of them, saying things that are really going to hurt their feelings, criticizing them, this kind of thing.
Ya, berikutnya adalah ucapan kasar, ya. Hal-hal yang kita katakan yang dapat menyakiti perasaan mereka. Bisa dalam bentuk hinaan, bisa dalam bentuk mengata-ngatain, dan bentuk lain yang akan menyakiti perasaan mereka.
And then the last one is idle talk. So that's just kind of gossiping, talking about this and that, that doesn't have any meaning. But it's, we spend a long time doing it. And sometimes we do it just to get people's attention and look like we were very clever and we have such a good personality.
Ya, berikutnya adalah omong kosong, hal-hal yang tidak perlu yang kita bicarakan. Kita juga biasanya suka mengatakan hal ini supaya orang akan menganggap bahwa kita berpengetahuan, kita pintar, supaya kita menjadi tenang.
So these are the four verbal non-virtues: lying, divisive speech, harsh speech, and idle talk.
Ada empat hal yang buruk berhubungan dengan ucapan, yaitu berbohong, kata-kata yang memecah belah, ucapan kasar, dan omong kosong.
Okay. And then there's three mental ones that we do just by what's going on in our mind.
Nah, tiga perbuatan mental, yaitu apa yang terjadi di dalam pikiran kita.
Okay. So the first one there is covetousness. And that's when we look at somebody else's possessions and we think, I wonder how I can get that person to give it to me. You know, we're craving what belongs to somebody else.
Pikiran berikutnya adalah kita melekat kepada apa yang dimiliki oleh orang lain. Oh, dia punya itu. Gimana caranya supaya itu jadi milik saya, ya?
And the second one is malice or ill will. And that's sitting and thinking about how I wanna, I'm so mad at somebody. You know how when you get mad, your mind just thinks again and again, he said that, she said this, they did this, they're so wrong, how dare do they do that? I want to get revenge, they can't talk about me. All the time just thinking very negative thoughts and wanting revenge.
Ya, pemikiran berikutnya adalah niat jahat. Jika kita marah, ya kita ingin membalas dendam. Nah, kenapa ini bisa terjadi? Karena kita duduk saja dan pikiran kita itu memainkan semua pemikiran. Oh, dia lakukan ini, dia jahat, dia nyakitin saya, dia seperti itu, ini, seperti itu. Ini membuat kita ingin membalas dendam.
And then wrong views is the last one. And this is thinking that things that do exist, spiritual things that do exist, don't exist.
Ini berikutnya adalah pandangan keliru, anggapan bahwa hal-hal yang ada secara spiritual kita anggap tidak ada.
So for example, saying, oh, there's no such thing as the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Yeah? Or it's impossible to become fully awakened. That, you know, that's just like fairy tales. Okay.
Misalnya enggak ada tuh yang namanya Buddha Dharma Sangha atau enggak bisa tuh mencapai penggugahan sempurna, itu kan cuma kisah dongeng saja.
Or saying you know, it's okay to kill, it's okay to steal, these things don't matter.
Atau bilang enggak apa-apa kok bunuh, mencuri enggak apa-apa, enggak masalah.
Yeah, you can do animal sacrifice, no problem.
Apa nanti kamu bikin pembebasan hewan aja? Atau nggak apa-apa kamu bisa kamu bikin apa melakukan pengorbanan hewan? Nggak apa-apa itu.
So those three: coveting, malice and wrong views are the three mental ones. So that makes 10 altogether.
Jadi tiga pemikiran yang buruk yaitu yang ingin punya barang orang lain, kemudian apa niat buruk dan ketiga adalah keliru. Itu adalah tiga hal buruk yang dilakukan melalui pikiran.
And then I want to just talk a little bit about how to purify the negative karma that we've created.
Dan saya ingin membahas sedikit bagaimana kita dapat mempurifikasi karma-karma negatif yang kita sudah lakukan.
Okay, because we don't want to really suffer the results of it, either, you know, painful results while we're alive or taking a bad rebirth. So it's really important to purify.
Ya, kenapa penting untuk dipurifikasi? Karena kita tidak ingin merasakan akibat buruknya ya, dalam bentuk kehidupan, kelahiran yang buruk di kehidupan mendatang atau perasaan sakit, susah yang dirasakan di kehidupan yang sekarang ini.
Okay. So there's a practice called the four opponent powers to do this.
Jadi ada sebuah praktik yang disebut sebagai empat kekuatan.
So the first is regretting our action.
Pertama adalah menyesali perbuatan kita.
So regretting our negative actions, this is different than feeling guilty. Feeling guilty, we just say, oh, I'm so horrible, you know, and that doesn't do any good. Regretting is more like, wow, I hurt somebody else. I created negative karma that's going to bring suffering for me. I really regret that.
Menyesal dengan merasa bersalah beda ya. Jadi merasa bersalah itu sebuah sikap, aduh, saya salah nih, saya menyakiti dia, aduh. Jadi mengeluh seperti itu tidak ada gunanya. Sedangkan menyesal itu berarti kita menyadari bahwa kita melakukan sebuah perbuatan yang buruk dan menyakiti orang lain dan saya menyesal melakukan.
That's the first. The second opponent power is restoring the relationship. And this means that we change our attitude towards whoever it was that we had harmed.
Ya, jadi berikutnya adalah kita memperbaiki hubungan kita dengan siapapun yang pernah kita sakiti.
Okay. So, for example, if we stole something from the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we stole something from the temple, we took offerings that had been made to the Buddha, we take them off the altar and use them for ourselves, you know, this kind of thing, then to repair that, we take refuge in the three jewels.
Ya, misalnya seseorang mengambil persembahan dari altar, ya, jadi mengkhianati Buddha, Dharma, dan Sangha, maka dia dapat mengambil kembali perlindungan kepada Buddha, Dharma, dan Sangha.
And if we hurt ordinary living beings, to change our mind about how we feel about them, to purify, then we generate love, compassion, bodhicitta, some positive attitude towards them.
Menyakiti makhluk lain, maka kita dapat menumbuhkan kasih sayang, menumbuhkan bodhicitta kepada mereka.
And then that's the second one. Then the third power is to do some kind of remedial action, like chanting the Buddha's name, bowing to the Buddha, reciting mantra, offering service, you know, and helping at a monastery, at a Dharma center, at a temple.
Ya, yang ketiga adalah kita langsung melakukan perbuatan yang bisa mengatasi itu ya. Misalnya kita membacakan sutra, mendaras mantra, kita melakukan pelayanan di wihara dan hal-hal logik dan positif lain.
And then the last of the four opponent powers is to make some kind of determination to avoid the action in the future.
Yang keempat adalah bertekad untuk menghindari perbuatan yang sama di masa mendatang.
So these four opponent powers to purify are psychologically very, very helpful. And when we feel down on ourselves because we don't like the way we're acting or treating other people, it's very, very helpful to do purification practices. It really changes our attitude and changes our mood.
Ya, jika Anda merasa bahwa Anda sangat buruk, maka Anda dapat bisa melakukan empat praktek ini supaya kita dapat mengubah pemikiran kita, mengubah mood kita.
And it also prevents us from experiencing suffering on account of the negative actions that we've done.
Ini dapat membantu kita untuk mencegah untuk merasakan perbuatan-perbuatan buruk yang pernah kita lakukan.
Okay. So that's why in verse 8, yeah, the Buddha said that all of the suffering we experience come from our own negative actions, not from other people, but from as a result of our own negative actions. And so when we understand this, then we want to be very careful with our actions and create virtuous ones that will result in happiness and avoid the non-virtuous ones that will result in suffering.
Ya, dan di Buddha sudah mengajarkan bahwa semua penderitaan yang kita rasakan adalah akibat dari perbuatan kita sendiri. Dengan memahami ini, maka kita akan menghindari melakukan perbuatan buruk yang menciptakan duka dan melakukan perbuatan-perbuatan baik yang dapat menimbulkan kebahagiaan.
Okay, so that's verse 8. Now verse 9.
Itulah ayat ke-8, kita masuk ke yang ke-9.
Okay, so verse 9 says, like the dew on the tip of a blade of grass, pleasures of the three worlds last only a while and then vanish. Aspire to the never-changing supreme state of liberation. This is the practice of bodhisattvas.
Ya, ini berbunyi seperti setetes embun yang ada di ujung rumput di pagi hari. Kesenangan di tiga dunia hanya bertahan sebentar dan akan lenyap. Beraspirasilah kepada pembebasan yang tidak akan pernah berubah, yang abadi.
Okay. So, if you look at the dew on a tip of a blade of grass, it's there and it kind of sparkles in the sunshine in the early morning, and then, wham! It evaporates and it's gone. So like that are all the pleasures of this life.
Jadi kesenangan di dunia ini, semua kesenangan di dunia ini, itu sama seperti setetes embun yang jika Anda perhatikan memancar, kalau ditimpa sinar matahari Anda lihat di ujung daun. Tapi dalam waktu sekejap, dia kemudian hilang.
So there's nothing wrong with enjoying the pleasure of this life. That's not a problem. What becomes the problem is when we get attached to it and we want more and we want better and we want this pleasure and that pleasure and we start acting in all sorts of not so nice ways to get the pleasure we want. That's what the problem is.
Boleh menikmati kesenangan. Masalahnya adalah kita melekat kepada kesenangan tersebut dan kita melakukan hal yang ini, hal yang itu, melakukan hal-hal yang buruk demi untuk mendapatkan sebuah kesenangan. Itulah masalah sejati.
And the thing is, when we die, all the things that we created negative karma with, our body, friends and relatives, possessions, they all stay here. And we go on with the karmic seeds into our next life.
Masalahnya ketika kita meninggal, itu semua kita tinggalkan. Ya, teman, harta, dan sebagainya sudah kita kumpulkan, kita tinggalkan. Yang kita bawa dengan, yang kita bawa bersama kita di kehidupan mendatang adalah
And the first thing that we strive for, and when we're new to Dharma, is first of all to get a good rebirth. Yeah, that's the most pressing thing, because our present life isn't going to last forever. So we want to create the causes to have a good rebirth by observing karma and its effects.
Nah, ketika kita sudah memahami dharma, maka kita perlu untuk dapat mendapatkan kelahiran berikutnya yang baik, karena kita telah memahami karma dan akibat-akibat.
But getting born again in samsara is still getting born under the influence of ignorance and polluted karma. So an upper rebirth is definitely better than a lower rebirth, but it's still in this cycle of existence.
Jadi kalau kita lahir lagi, maka kita masih terikat kepada ketidaktahuan. Dan meskipun kelahiran yang lebih baik itu tentu lebih baik daripada kelahiran di alam rendah, namun tetap saja itu adalah sebuah kelahiran di lingkaran kehidupan dan kematian.
So that's why this verse says, aspire for the never-changing supreme state of liberation. In other words, don't be satisfied just with another rebirth, even though it's a fortunate one. Try and attain nirvana. Try and get out of the cycle of samsara. We all want a state of perfect peace that is long-lasting, that will not degenerate, that will not vanish. Nirvana is that kind of state. So rather than just looking for good rebirths and pleasure in samsara, because all of that, ultimately we separate from it and it's unsatisfactory, let's put our sights on nirvana, where we will have an actual lasting state of peace and bliss, because our mind has been completely purified of all the negativities.
Ya, jadi ayat ini, syair ini mendorong kita untuk beraspirasi untuk mencapai nirwana, ya, sebuah kondisi kebahagiaan, pembebasan yang sejati. Ya, karena bila kita masih beraspirasi untuk mencapai kelahiran berikutnya yang baik, maka kita tetap akan berada di lingkaran samsara, di mana segala sesuatunya itu tidak kekal, tidak bertahan. Maka alih-alih kita ingin mencapai kehidupan berikutnya yang lebih baik, maka aspirasikanlah diri Anda untuk mencapai nirwana, mencapai apa, kondisi pembebasan sejati yang tidak akan pernah.
So that's why it says aspire to the never changing supreme state of liberation. Good advice.
Ya, ini nasihat yang baik, mengajak kita untuk beraspirasi untuk mencapai kondisi pembebasan yang agung.
Okay. So I think we'll stop here this evening. We could do one or two questions. There's a little bit of time.
Baiklah, kita untuk pembahasan syair kita sudahi. Kita masih ada waktu untuk satu atau dua pertanyaan. Silakan.
So they can write in the chat box or they can ask directly.
Directly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think I have. Okay. This question related to about taking what is not given. Is it only apply among humans? I mean, taking from humans. In Indonesia, for example, I don't know how to call it, the term. You know, you have this, let me ask some friends, maybe they know. Sarang burung walet itu apa ya? You know, maybe let me explain.
Bird nest.
The bird nest.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the bird nest? The Chinese used to use the bird's nest
for medicine.
Yeah, for medicine. Yes.
Yeah.
So is that include?
You know, we were talking about this at lunchtime today at the Abbey.
And oh.
Yeah, just today. So I don't have a real clear answer for that, you know, because on one hand, it is taking things that belong to the birds or, you know, or we eat honey, we take what belongs to the bees. You know, on the other hand, usually human existence is considered a better rebirth. And if that is something that can help keep human beings alive without killing anybody, yeah. But I don't have a real clear answer on that one. So I think it's up for each of us to think about and make our own decision.
Ya, jadi untuk pertanyaan ini maka saya tidak punya sebuah jawaban yang jelas ya. Jadi tergantung sudut pandang kita, kebijaksanaan kita. Topik ini kebetulan tadi dibahas katanya pada saat mereka sedang makan siang. Dan kenapa? Karena memang kalau cerita sarang burung walet ataupun apa lebah madu itu kan milik mereka. Tapi juga ada satu konsep di mana manusia itu harus hidup sehat untuk bisa menjaga kehidupannya.
Something like killing an animal to eat its meat, that's very straightforward and should be avoided because it, you know, it's there's killing, there's taking life with that.
Sedangkan membunuh hewan untuk diambil dagingnya itu jelas harus dijelas ya, to the point langsung itu harus dihindari karena itu adalah pembunuhan.
Yeah. So of course, and, you know, we want to do as little harm as possible while we're alive on the planet.
Dan saat kita hidup, kita sebisa mungkin, sesedikit mungkin menyakiti makhluk lain.
But everybody will, you know, have different limits on that, whether they eat bird nest or not, whether they put honey in their tea or not.
Dan setiap orang punya keterbatasannya ya, apakah mereka makan sarang burung walet atau apa minum teh pakai madu atau tidak, itu bergantung kepada setiap orang masing-masing. Okay. Well, we have one more.
Okay.
The question is like this: which one is better, parita chanting or reciting mantra, or both is the same?
What's most important is what is your motivation for chanting? What is your motivation for reciting mantra? That's what makes something virtuous, you know. Otherwise, you know, you have all the little things that you click on and they recite mantra for you. Yeah, there's hundreds of them, you know, and so if it was just a thing of, you know, reciting Pali, reciting Sanskrit mantras, praises, then, you know, maybe your little tape recorder could get enlightened. Yeah, because it chants more than you do. But it's not that, you know, the amount of chanting or, you know, which thing you're chanting. It's why. What is your motivation for doing it? That's what is going to create virtue.
Yang penting adalah motivasi, ya, alasan kita untuk melakukannya. Karena itulah yang akan menentukan apa kita menghasilkan kebajikan atau tidak. Ya. Karena kalau cuma baca doang, ada tahu ya ada tape recorder yang bisa mengulang sutta atau mantra, dia sudah tercapai duluan.
That's why at the beginning of every activity, it's very good to try and generate a compassionate motivation and generate the bodhicitta as our reason for engaging in that.
Ya, oleh sebab itu di setiap kita memulai sesi sangat penting sekali bagi kita untuk memunculkan tekad, memunculkan bodhicitta.
Hai.
Halo.
Okay. So, you know, first you really think of your motivation and And then when you're chanting, think of the meaning of the words that you're chanting. Otherwise, if it's just, you know, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa, you know, I mean, is that going to create any merit? You're just, you know, looking around and spaced out, yeah, or going, oh, mani padme hum, mani padme hum, mani padme hum, mani padme hum, mani padme hum. You know, you have to do these things with, you know, some feeling and some reverence and some wanting to generate wisdom and compassion in yourself by doing this.
Ya, bayangkan kalau seseorang baca parita itu ngasal-ngasal, namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa, mari pamit, mari pamit, dengan sikap dan perilaku yang tidak pantas, apakah apa yang akan dapat dihasilkan? Itu yang kita diminta merenungkan. Oleh sebab itu, pikirkanlah niat, tekad, dan motivasi kita, dan ketika kita melakukannya, harus ada satu rasa di mana kita memberikan penghormatan kepada apa yang kita sedang baca.
That's why at the beginning of the teaching, we recited that prayer 3 times, we took refuge, and then we generate our motivation, and we say, by the power of listening to teachings, may we become a fully awakened Buddha.
Itulah sebabnya ketika sebelum memulai sesi, kita membacakan tekad bodhicitta 3 kali, dan bertekad semoga dengan kekuatan ini saya dapat mencapai pegugahan menjadi Buddha yang sempurna.
Okay.
Ya.
Okay, so please, you know, until we meet again, think about what you heard and contemplate it.
Ya. Jadi sampai kita berjumpa lagi, silakan Anda pikirkan dan renungkan apa yang telah kita bahas.
And the book is translated into Bahasa Indonesian. So, you know, please read the book and think about, you know, these verses, because they will give you a lot of guidance in your life that is really invaluable.
Bukunya tersedia dalam bahasa Indonesia. Silakan dibaca karena Anda akan mendapatkan bimbingan dan panduan yang sangat berharga dalam hidup Anda.
Okay. Good. Do you want to read the dedication verse?
Yes, Rudy is going to read it, Venerable. He has this screen sharing. Kalau Rudy, silakan di-share baca.
Baiklah, teman-teman sedharma semuanya, mari kita membacakan dedikasi kebajikan atas apa yang telah kita lakukan hari ini dengan mendengarkan dharma dari Yang Mulia Ventup Ten Chodron. Dengan membacakan dedikasi ini, semoga membawa kebajikan bagi kita semua. Kita bacakan bersama-sama dalam teks bahasa Indonesia. Dengan kebajikan ini, semoga kita segera mencapai pencerahan seperti Guru Buddha. Maka kita mampu membebaskan semua makhluk dari penderitaannya. Semoga batin pencerahan yang berharga ini, bila belum muncul, akan segera bangkit dan berkembang. Semoga yang telah bangkit tidak merosot, tetapi terus berkembang selama-lamanya. Terima kasih.
Sadu, sadu, sadu.